Will counsel, beginning with the Secretary's counsel, please make your appearance for the record.
Your Honor, Ronan Morris for the Secretary, and with me is Christopher Wallace.
Counsel for the appellant.
Kenneth Carpenter, appearing on behalf of Mr. Westerfeld. Also appearing is Mr. Richard Frankel and Ms. Jennifer Stonage.
If counsel are ready, we'll begin the argument with Secretary's counsel, with Mr. Carpenter.
May it please the court, Kenneth Carpenter on behalf of Mr. Edward Westerfeld. The pivotal event in this case is the circumstance in which a decision review officer issues a determination of clear and unmistakable error in the case that was appealed by Mr. Westerfeld. Mr. Westerfeld had initiated an appeal of a VA's July 2017 decision that had granted him service-connected compensation for his disability from PTSD and assigned a separate rating of 30% using Diagnostic Code 9411 from March 30, 2016. As a result, the DRO, under his regulatory authority, had the discretion to determine whether or not the underlying decision, that is the July 25th, 2017 decision, contained a clear and unmistakable error. The decision review officer in this case made that determination, and upon making that determination, that vitiated the finality of that underlying decision and created a new decision based upon the revision made by the decision review officer. In this case,
excuse me, sorry to interrupt, Mr. Carpenter, but what is the basis for your statement? Is it the law, misapplication of the law, or your argument as to what he did wrong?
Well, the decision review officer did nothing wrong. The VA did something wrong in that they issued a statement of the case that was in response to the decision, but not in response to the notice of disagreement that had been initiated by Mr. Westerfeld.
Right. And what is the determination of this court that you would like? I don't mean to cut you off on your argument, but no. Can we get right to the heart of it? What should be our holding?
I believe that this court is required to reverse the decision of the board that addressed an appeal over which it did not have subject matter jurisdiction. And further, that this court must remand this case with instructions to the board to direct the secretary on remand to issue a statement of case in response to the timely filed notice of disagreement with the decision review officer's decision that found clear and unmistakable error. That is the outcome that is required under 7105 and 7104, which dictate the initiation of an appeal and the jurisdiction of the board. The board can only have authority to act if there has been a proper notice of disagreement. The statement of case that was originally issued in this case was based upon a notice of disagreement with the initial rating assigned in the original grant in 2017, not the notice of disagreement that was filed after the decision review officer made his clear and unmistakable error decision and issued a new decision.
What do you make of the case called Hamilton v. Brown? It's one of the early cases in the court, and it basically says that there's one NOD per claim. So even if there's new development or different issues, that would be covered by the NOD filed for that claim. Now, if there's a different claim discovered during the development, that might be subject to its own NOD. But the idea, I mean, the rating may have changed here, but the claim is fundamentally the same. It's a PTSD claim.
Well, with all due respect, Your Honor, I don't believe that that's a correct understanding of Hamilton. Hamilton did involve the nature of the claim. This case does not involve the nature of the claim. It involves the nature of the decision made by the VA. The original decision made by the VA was a favorable disposition to Mr. Westerfeld that allowed for the award of a separate rating for his disability for PTSD. The decision review officer, upon consideration of his NOD with the initial rating assignment, issued a new decision which revised and fundamentally changed the decision of the secretary from a grant of a separate rating to a grant that incorporated a previous award based upon his TBI condition, and then merged those two decisions as part of the new decision made by the decision review officer. So in this case, as distinguishable from Hamilton, we have a situation in which the secretary was required under 7105 to issue a statement of case in response to the second NOD with the new decision. While it is in fact a second NOD, it is in fact the first NOD on that decision by the secretary. The previous NOD.
But how is it? I mean, the claim was filed for PTSD, and I mean, I understand exactly what you say, which is, you know, the there was a rating awarded, which the DRO then reduced, but then for the board on appeal, it's still the evaluation, albeit it would be de novo, of a PTSD claim.
I mean, no, claim it would not be. With due respect, the issue on appeal based upon the NOD is whether or not the DRO correctly determined that there was a clear and unmistakable error. That is a different issue from the issue that was initiated in the first NOD, which was the rating for PTSD. The effect of the DRO decision was to remove that award and merge it within a pre-existing award. Now, that has to be subject to a separate notice of disagreement and a separate review by the board of the decision of the secretary.
And that's what you'd like?
And that's what we believe we are entitled to as a matter of law, Your Honor.
And that's what you'd like us to order.
I'm sorry?
And that's what you'd like us to order.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. Judge Toth.
Judge Meredith, did you have a question?
Was it Judge Meredith? I thought it was Judge Toth.
Both of us. Judge Toth, go ahead.
Okay, just quickly. So how would that work practically, right? Because, you know, if insofar as there would be two different, so let's say that under your argument, you've got the board now reviewing this Q determination, right?
Yes.
And then separately reviewing de novo the PTSD. What happens if the board?
No, Your Honor. To be clear, there is only one matter at issue, and that is the decision of the DRO to make a Q determination.
But what would, I mean, because under Hamilton, I mean, there's one NOD per claim, right? And the idea, your idea would be that the NOD as to the original would be extinguished, and now he would have to file a new NOD as to this different rating that he's received.
Well, that's the nature of clear and unmistakable error determination, is to extinguish the prior decision based upon a finding of a clear and unmistakable error made in that decision. Now, there is an underlying question here that is really not necessary for this court to address, but that is what happens to that first decision. My response to that is what happens to that first decision is that it remains in limbo until there is administrative appellate review by the board of the Q determination. And if the veteran is not satisfied with that review, then he has the statutory right to appeal that decision of the board to this court. And that's what everybody frankly thought in the last two go-rounds of the review of the board decision in this case.
But what about I just have one more question that I'll yield to Judge Meredith. But what about the development that occurred after the DROs? You know, any new evidence post the DRO decision that normally would be properly, you know, its legacy, that would be something the board could then consider de novo. Under your argument, it would be not, all of that would be, in a sense, off the, it would be outside the scope of what would just be a kind of cue determination, you know, of the DRO decision.
I believe that it would be, Your Honor, because the uniqueness of the previously regulatory provision for clear and unmistakable error, which then was codified by Congress in a statute for both ROQ and BVAQ, renders any prior decision non-final, and a new decision is issued by the Secretary based upon the revision. And it is that new decision which is the only decision that is subject to a notice of disagreement. The previous notice of disagreement was on a decision that was vitiated by the DRO's Q determination. And that's what makes this case, if you will, panel worthy, because we are faced with a issue of first impression to deal with the issues that you are describing. And the reason that this happened was, is that the statement of case that was issued was in response to an NOD that had been vitiated. And therefore, that statement of case would not have resulted in a exercise of jurisdiction by the Board of Veterans Appeals that has now been subject to two reviews by this court.
Counsel, thank you. Counsel, can I get you to explain how your arguments mesh with 38 CFR 3.2600, which seems to envision that once the DRO issues its decision, no action is required by the claimant unless he or she is satisfied with what the DRO did. Seems like VA just automatically goes on with the traditional appeals process. So how does that square with your argument that essentially a new NOD is required after the DRO issues a decision?
Well, I think that as written, the regulation contemplates that nothing will happen as a result of that 2600 review that is any different from a normal appeal process under the legacy system. However, that regulation does not address these circumstances in which under that regulation, the DRO determines that there was a clear and unmistakable error. Now, as I mentioned earlier, there is a legitimate question of whether or not that regulation could possibly be valid to authorize a clear and unmistakable decision in a decision that was not final. The law is clear that Q can only lie in a final decision. And there was no final decision because Mr. Westerfeld had issued, had filed, initiated a notice of disagreement with the initial rating assigned. So that decision couldn't have been final, and yet under 3.2600, the DRO is given Q authority to revise a decision. Now, there is enough ambiguity in that regulation that we don't know whether it was ever intended to be to find Q in the decision on appeal, as opposed to Q in other decisions that may have influenced that decision.
Counsel, you
but that's not really the case
the court's here. Decision in Young, do you not think that answers that question about whether there can be Q in a non-final decision?
I'm sorry, Anna, I missed the first part of what
Young.
You said.
Young,
the court's decision Young. In Young.
No, Your Honor, I don't believe so, because here we're dealing with a clear and unmistakable decision that by the very nature of that under the statutory provisions requires the issuance of a new decision. And that's what happened. And when that decision was issued, the veteran filed a timely notice of disagreement with that decision. And under 7105, the secretary was required by the then legacy statute to issue a statement of case, which never occurred based upon that notice of disagreement with that Q decision. And that's the unique issue that is before this panel.
Judge Meredith, I forgot to ask you if you wanted to reserve any time. You've got 5 minutes left here now. I'll give you more time if you need it.
I thought I announced that at the previous meeting that it was 10 minutes. And I thought we started at 20 minutes, but we started at 20 and I have 30. So I've reserved 10 for my rebuttal. So this is just part of my opening time.
Go ahead.
So back to the what relief the appellant is requesting here. Yes. If we were to disagree and find that the board did have subject matter jurisdiction, what is the appropriate outcome in your view?
I think the appropriate outcome is the same, because the question then becomes, what was the issue before the board? And the issue decided before the board was the Q issue. But the issue in the original notice of disagreement, if that is the court's determination that that notice of disagreement controls, then that issue is the assignment of a separate rating and the rating of the post-traumatic stress disorder. The problem with doing that is that then the court doesn't recognize the DRO's revised decision. So the revised decision, the new decision, becomes the proverbial elephant in the room that must be addressed to identify the issue before the board. And according to the board, the issue was the determination made by the DRO without acknowledging that that decision was a clear and unmistakable error determination and was not the subject matter of the original notice of disagreement. And under 7105 in legacy, the function of the statement of the case is to determine whether or not the original disagreement can be resolved without further proceeding. And okay, clearly...
So let me clarify, yeah. Counsel. So if we were to find that the board did have subject matter jurisdiction, the appellant has made a number of different arguments over the course of these proceedings, anywhere from merits arguments to a number of procedural errors that he suggested that the DRO or the board made. Can you clarify, is he abandoning any of those arguments? And can you clarify which arguments it is that you would still want addressed if the court were to find that there were jurisdiction? Specifically because some of the arguments you've made are inconsistent with each other as the appeal has gone on. For example, that you didn't appeal, or he did not appeal the May 2018 DRO decision, and that he did. So can you just clarify for us which legal arguments you would still want us to address of those you've made during the course of these proceedings?
The legal arguments that the appellant wishes to have this court address are, first, the subject matter of the Board of Veterans' Appeals. Second, if the court finds that it had subject matter jurisdiction, did the board make the correct determination based upon the matter that was raised in the original notice of disagreement, which was his entitlement to a rating more than 30% for his post-traumatic stress disorder under 9411 as a separate and distinct rating? What the DRO did was to merge that decision with a several year old decision on TBI, which resulted in a severance of that award and a effective nullification of the grant that he received on his claim for post-traumatic stress disorder.
So arguments like 3.105E, that there was insufficient notice of the 2017 decision, insufficient notice of the 2008, is he abandoning those issues?
No, Your Honor, because I think those are fundamental to what the issue was before the board, what the board had subject matter jurisdiction. And as I discussed with Judge Toth, it's not a question of what the claim is. It's the question of what the issue was that the appellant disagreed with. And in his original notice of disagreement, he disagreed with the assignment of a 30% rating for his separately recognized post-traumatic stress disorder, which the DRO elevated to 70, but then merged with a pre-existing 70% rating for TBI, which is a net result of a reduction to zero for the post-traumatic stress disorder, which we believe was unlawful, which then implicates all of those other notice issues. And I'm not sure whether I'm now in my, oh no, I've got 30 seconds left. Unless there are further questions, I'll reserve the balance of my time for
the- Anything further at this point, Judge Toth? Judge Meredith?
I'm good.
Fine. We'll hear from counsel for the government.
Thank you, Your Honors. Your Honors, 3.2600 is a legacy regulation that allows claimants in the legacy system to elect a de novo review of agency decisions by more experienced agency adjudicators before their appeal is sent to the board. It gives these claimants a second opportunity to present their case to the agency, this time before more experienced adjudicators, and allows the agency, through these more experienced adjudicators, to look at the case again and determine if the decision on review is correct and if any further development or action is needed. While these more experienced adjudicators can award benefits, they may not revise erroneous decisions in a manner that's advantageous to the claimant unless the error is clear and unmistakable. This is an agency imposed.
Just a minute, Mr. Morris. Why is that? Why expend government agent time if they're not going to modify it? They're more experienced. Presumably they would come to an identical decision based on their experience, saying their colleagues were correct, or they'll change it.
And these more experienced adjudicators are allowed to award benefits, and they are allowed to order additional developments. The only caveat is that they can't revise a decision in a manner less favorable to the claimant without meeting a certain standard. And that's an agency-imposed caveat on the authority of its adjudicators. And that standard doesn't apply to the board, and it doesn't impact the board's authority. Ultimately, what the provision is doing is the provision is providing for efficiency. It's providing for that second ability of the claimant to present their case and for that the reviewer to review the case again.
Hasn't seemed to work that way here. Do you acknowledge that?
Your Honor, in our view, it worked as intended. There was a clear and obvious error in the RO's 2017 decision, and the DRO caught that error early on in the process, and it revised that original decision.
All right.
And Your Honor, and I'll skip to the point here, that had the appellant not elected the DRO review, or had the DRO not identified that obvious error, the appeal would have continued on to the board, and the board would have been expected to identify it. Because again, this is a clear and unmistakable error that the DRO found, and it was obvious. The board would have been just as expected to review the record de novo and recognize that there was no evidence in this case distinguishing the veteran's TBI and PTSD symptoms. So the board would have been expected to correct that.
So, I mean, it's a bit curious, like, what's the point of the language in the regulation about the, you know, the heightened standard for the DRO to reduce something if it's just a no vote anyway for the board, right? I mean, that effectively, I mean, it's almost effectively unreviewable, because for the board, it's the same either way. It's just a de novo kind of fluid claim that they can assign whatever rating they feel appropriate.
Correct. To a large extent, Your Honor, that is correct. This is a part of the agency's adjudication of the claim. It's an agency-imposed standard. Presumably, it prevents a DRO from simply reaching a different conclusion. It is binding on that DRO. But this is the way. This is what the agency has determined as a process for ultimately determining what the final agency decision is. And that, Your Honor, is a point that I think is fundamentally in dispute with the appellant's position here, is that there was only one final agency decision on the appellant's claim. And that decision was that he was entitled to only a single disability rating for his TBI and PTSD at 70%. That's the final agency decision that moved on to the board. What the DRO did was it revised, as of the date of issuance, the original erroneous RO decision. And the RO is entitled to provide for the process and procedures for how its final decisions are issued. This was at the election of the appellant. The DRO reviewed, and ultimately the agency's final decision was that a single rating was warranted here.
Would this have been different? Because the 30% award did not change the veteran's combined rating. Would it? I mean, is this calculus different if it would have changed his rating, or if he had started to receive payments or something like that?
No, Your Honor. Where that might have become relevant was if the DRO had not identified the error, or if this had gone directly from the RO to the board, there may have been an implication if the board changed the award at that point. While the board is conducts a de novo review, there are some procedural limitations.
That would have been effectively the Murphy case,
yes, which wouldn't have applied in the alternative scenario. But that's where that no change in compensation would have come into play. But it doesn't come into play here because the system worked as intended. The error was caught by the agency, and the final agency decision that went onto the board was what the agency viewed as correct, which the board ultimately affirmed. It affirmed on its de novo review that the appellant was not entitled to separate ratings for the PTSD and TBI, and that the single 70% rating covered the extent of his disability. And that also was a finding that, you know, at least previously the court did recognize was correct, albeit in an earlier decision that was withdrawn, but also implicitly by virtue of the last iteration of the decision prior to this appeal, finding that the only error was, you know, with respect to the Q standard.
So what do you make of... How would you respond to Mr. Carpenter's argument about that this changed the NOD, that effectively the rating reduction warranted a completely new NOD to place a new appellate status?
First, it's unclear to me why the appellant would argue for an additional imposition of another filing requirement for claimants. In this case, it would not appear that a new NOD would have been necessary because the disagreement still remained. The appellant wanted more benefits for PTSD, and this was a continuation of that disagreement. And no different than if the DRO had granted some additional benefits, but not the maximum benefits, an NOD typically would not be required in those cases. The appellant's disagreement here was with the rating, and that disagreement would have continued. But more fundamental, I think here is that Q determination, that itself is not, the board did not have to engage in a Q analysis of that RO decision. And even assuming it's appeal, you know, general appealability, and even assuming that an NOD was required, and again, it would not seem that there's any reason why a new NOD would be required, given again that there's only a single decision that's being made with respect to the appellant's claim. But even if it was multiple decisions made with respect to the claim, you still wouldn't need that because their original NOD was already filed disagreeing with the rating. So in no scenario would it seem that a new NOD was necessary. here we do have one. The appellant's argument continues, you know, the essence of the lack of jurisdiction that he argues, it, you know, stems from the failure to issue an SOC. But an SOC itself is not a jurisdictional prerequisite to board action. So even accepting that a second NOD either was required or at the very least, because it was filed, required some action, the SOC wouldn't have been a jurisdictional prerequisite. But I'd also suggest here, though, that all of the necessary information was provided. The SOC that was issued on the agency's final decision, which was a single 70% rating. It identified all the relevant laws, including 4.14 and 2.600. The only thing it didn't do was identify the Q determination as part of the decision. But again, that's not the issue that's reviewed by the board. What the board is reviewing is the propriety of, you know, of the rating assignment. And the board did that. And to the extent that the board does do that and did do that in this case and found that the veteran wasn't entitled to separate ratings, it effectively addressed any appealable question, you know, stemming from the DRO's Q determination, because the board found there was no entitlement.
So, counsel, could I jump in there? You're suggesting that the board cannot or should not be reviewing whether the DRO appropriately found Q. But if it's VA finding unfavorable Q, that is negative to the veteran, it seems like the burden of proof is on VA to show that they met that stringent standard for Q. Whereas if the board is just reviewing whether the appellant is entitled to a higher rating, then the burden would be on the appellant. So how does your argument account for that switching burden? Does VA never have to convince anyone that they did meet that stringent Q standard?
Your Honor, I would tend to agree with your point if it was the board in this case that was making that determination, you know, in the first instance. But again, what we have is a part of the process that the agency uses to issue its final decision. And that was the agency's final decision. The agency imposed a standard, a discretionary standard at that, on some of its adjudicators. And ultimately, whether that adjudicator, whether that DRO was right or wrong, that question is resolved by the board's de novo review of the case. If the veteran was entitled to separate ratings, the DRO would have been wrong. If the veteran was not, or not necessarily wrong, because it could have been based on, you know, for subsequently developed evidence. But that, nevertheless, the board's decision on the issue, on the question of the appropriate rating, resolves any question about the propriety of the DRO's revision, because it resolves the question as to the propriety of the RO's final decision. The DRO's action in this case was simply the terminal event of the agency's consideration of the appellant's claim.
Is there anything other than 3.2600 that suggests that that's how the process works, that when the DRO makes an unfavorable Q determination, that nobody reviews whether the DRO appropriately found that the stringent level of Q had been met?
I don't believe there's anything that speaks to it directly, but I think it is implicit in both the statutory and regulatory scheme concerning the board's review. The board reviews the agency's, you know, what would otherwise be the final binding agency decision. The board is explicitly permitted to revise the agency decision under 3.104. So any binding nature of that agency decision, the board is explicitly permitted to revise that decision. And it's also permitted to revise that in a manner that's less favorable to the veteran. Also not bound by the favorable findings made by the agency below, because it's de novo review. Now, granted, there are some caveats or judicially imposed caveats in terms of process, but those are not applicable here. As to the board's review itself, the board conducts that de novo review. And so it is implicit in that, you know, I believe that that addresses, you know, the consequential effect of the DRO's, you know, the standard that's imposed on the DRO.
So let me address your argument about the the statement of the case. Maybe I'm looking at something different than you are, but there's a May 2018 statement of the case, record 843, and it talks about the rating decision of July 2017 was clearly and unmistakably erroneous in assigning a separate 30% rating for PTSD. And then following that statement of the case, the appellant, he submitted a new NOD, but he also submitted a Form 9 saying he wanted to appeal everything that appeared in the SOC. So how does that not place before the board the issue of whether there was Q in the 2017 decision?
I'm sorry, the first SOC that you referred to is on what page?
Record 843. Perhaps there's a number of different documents in the record. You may be looking at a different one.
And I believe that statement of the case addressed the entitlement to the single combined 70% rating.
But it mentions Q on page 843. My point is, if there's an SOC, there's a DRO decision as to Q, there's an SOC as to Q, there's a Form 9 as to Q, why is Q not before the board in the decision on appeal?
It's not before the board directly. It's before the board to the extent that it is a part of the process, a part of the procedure that occurred. And the agency itself needs to recognize that procedure because it's an agency-imposed procedure, a procedure that's imposed on its own personnel. But the decision, the ultimate decision of the agency that was on appeal to the board was that single 70% rating. The DRO's decision had simply corrected a decision that was previously issued while the issue was on direct review and appeal. And that's critical here because in this scenario, we've never left the agency. We don't have a prior final decision. We have the decision that's directly on review. The agency caught an error before it got to the board, which is part of the process and the way 3.2600 was designed and what it was designed to do. The decision that reached the board was the propriety of that rating because, again, had the DRO not been involved, that issue would have been there. The board would have been expected to provide a correct decision. And at the end of the day, that is what Q has always been about, is just ensuring that decisions are not obviously wrong.
Okay, so let's talk for a minute about the appellant's September 2017 notice of disagreement. At the time, the only decision that he could have been appealing was denial of above 30% for PTSD. That's what he'd been awarded at that time. Even assuming, putting aside for now, whether the board can or should be reviewing Q, is that issue not still before the board of what is the appropriate rating since I believe 2016 was the appeal period? So 2016 to 2022, when the board issues a decision on appeal, is the appropriate rating for that entire period still before the board, regardless of what happened with the Q?
Yes, the scope of the appeals period didn't change.
Do you read the board decision as having appropriately decided whether the appellant could have gotten different, maybe stage ratings during that period, especially from 2017 to 2022? And before you answer, I'd point you to record at 19, where the board says essentially that they can't consider evidence beyond 2017 because that's what they have to look at in determining whether there was Q.
Your Honor, what makes this slightly more complicated is that we have two different board decisions. The first one was subject to an earlier memorandum decision, and in that decision is where the board addressed the propriety of the rating and the propriety of separate awards. That board decision, as I read it, was only vacated or remanded to the extent that the board didn't address the Q issue, which we don't. Again, our position is that it didn't need to, but that is where the board addressed that. The present decision on appeal was the result of the specific orders, And granted, they could potentially have been interpreted differently, but nevertheless, it was only about Q. So it only would have been, you know, to the extent that it was ordered to address the DRO Q, it would have been limited only to the evidence that existed at the time.
I mean, I understand that's law of the case. I wrote that decision, but we, as a panel, I mean, we could effectively disavow that. And then to Judge Meredith's question, I mean, this would be all the development and all the evidence that postdated the DRO determination would then be really, in a sense, non-final, and then the board could consider that.
Yes, I believe that the board did. And to the extent that, you know, the questions in this case reduce ultimately to what should happen with the earlier decision, you know, I suppose that's largely for the court to consider. But we do believe that that original board decision addressed everything appropriately. It's not on appeal right now, so it's not something that's been being litigated right now. But our view is that it did consider all of the evidence, including anything that was subsequently developed, as it was required to do in the case of an appeal of a decision, you know, regarding a proper rating. The question, as I see it, concerns more, you know, the present board decision, which in our view was, I think, superfluous, because the necessary decision had already been made. The board's engagement in Q was unnecessary. Again, it's our view that it never has to directly find Q, that to the extent that any review was necessary of the DRO's Q determination, that is implicit, and that is accomplished by the board's review of the merits of the entitlement to, you know, a different rating. So I think that addresses the question, but again, what we view as the bigger, you know, what we view as the issue here, you know, one is what analysis the board had to perform. And it's our position that the only analysis the board had to perform was a review of the appropriate rating that the veteran should receive. And that stems from the process at the agency, which ultimately led to a final agency decision that the veteran was entitled to a 70% rating. The board conducted the de novo review and reached the same conclusion. I suppose it's debatable as to whether the court, you know, did it effectively affirm that, but we do believe that it did. Nevertheless, its current decision, even though the board used a higher standard, would also suffice on the merits of that question to provide a plausible basis to support the view that the veteran is not entitled to separate awards.
Any other questions, Judge Toth?
Quickly, this process now under the AMA is totally different, right? The process of revising things and the continuous de novo review doesn't exist anymore under the AMA. This is really more of a legacy phenomenon, right?
Yeah, everything about this case is legacy circumstances, from the very existence or the use of the DRO and the DRO process, to the manner in which evidence could have been submitted all along, to the, you know, inapplicability of current AMA regulations regarding standards to change the, you know, prior decisions or findings. This is the quintessential legacy case where the board was not limited other than to the extent by Murphy or other, you know, cases that spoke directly to certain processes, you know, that would be used in situations that are not applicable here. At the end of the day, Your Honor, all we have here, we had a decision that was made on a claim, an initial decision, wrong. The appellant elected the de novo review. The de novo review was completed, and the ultimate final agency decision was that the veteran was only entitled to a single rating. That proceeded to the board. It did not need a new notice of disagreement. It did not, you know, required an SOC, even though it's not jurisdictional. One was provided, and the board assessed that issue. Beyond that, it is just a matter of making the circumstances more complicated. There is no direct review of every of what ultimately was the non-final aspects of the agency's decision. And Your Honor, if there are no further questions, the only thing I do want to add is that to the extent that, I'm sorry?
Judge Meredith has a question.
Regarding some of the procedural arguments that I spoke with Appellant's counsel about, they've argued that there was no notice of the 2017 decision, the 2018 decision, various other procedural errors. From the record that we have, it doesn't look like any of those procedural arguments were raised before the agency. Can you give us VA's view on whether the court should entertain any of those arguments in the first instance, and also whether you view that any of those issues have been abandoned through the various iterations of pleadings that have occurred over the course of this litigation?
Your Honor, there has been a lot of changing arguments. To the extent that any argument concerns the merits issue of whether the appellant is entitled to multiple ratings, we believe that all of that was completed with the issuance of the last board decision, given the limited nature of what was remanded. So outside of arguments, that concerned, the board's specific Q determination, which again, in our view, was superfluous and unnecessary, we believe that those arguments have either, concerning the merits, have either been abandoned or explicitly addressed already in this case.
Anything else? And you had something more, Mr. Morris?
The only final point, I did note that, the appellant did suggest at some point, that the 3.2600 may be an invalid regulation. And my response there is simply that there has been no challenge to the validity of this regulation at any point, either during the earlier iteration of this case or at any point until now. So, comes from our view, that's not an issue that the court should even entertain at this point.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We'll hear from counsel for the appellate. Mr. Carpenter, your reply.
Yes, Your Honor. May it please the court. I'd like to bring the court's attention to the Federal Circuit's decision in the DAV rule challenge that determined that the proper interpretation of 38 U.S.C. 7104A, the jurisdictional statute for the board, was that the secretary is required to provide review of the secretary's decision, and that the appeal affords the appellant the right to a decision on the secretary's decision. In this case, there are, in fact, two different decisions of the secretary. And that is an irreconcilable problem statutorily for the board's jurisdiction. The original decision
of
the secretary.
What about for us? What about for us? Can we resolve the difficulty?
Well, I believe you can, Your Honor, by granting the motion to reverse on the basis of the lack of subject matter jurisdiction. I understand why this court might want to try to shoehorn jurisdiction based upon the references within the statement of the case to the Q determination. The problem with that is that there was a decision in which the veteran filed a timely notice of disagreement with that Q determination. That was the second decision. That decision, the veteran is entitled to one review on appeal. That has not happened, and it hasn't happened because the secretary didn't comply with the statutory obligation under 7105 to respond with a statement of the case to that notice of disagreement, which would have allowed for one review.
Mr. Carpenter, my question earlier is a serious question, right, which is a rating, it's still a rating on a claim. And, under your argument, you would have basically potentially two different, like the board in two different forums deciding effectively a rating on the same claim, right? Because you said, basically Mr. Westervelt would have had the option to continue the de novo review with an NOD and then also do an NOD on the Q determination. What happens if the board arrives at different results for those, right? So it affirms the finding of Q and reducing it to zero. And then on de novo, the board would grant a 50% rating. You now have two completely different ratings by the same body on the same claim. How do you account for that? Because I think that's the issue that Hamilton is getting to, which is it's effectively the same claim, not the same. The rating is not a claim.
No, Your Honor, but the rating was the decision in one case and not the decision in the other case. The decision in the other case was to change the effect of the award to merge it with a pre-existing award.
So
that was a separate decision of the Secretary.
I understand your argument. I understand. What would you do with the two different ratings then in the hypo that I gave you, you know, where you've got two NODs affect, you know, one addressing the Q, and let's say they affirm that, and then another just doing de novo review of the claim itself. What happens if the board arrives at divergent results there? Two different ratings. How do we deal with that?
In my view, Your Honor, you have to deal with it by enforcing the legacy requirements for the issuance of a statement of case under 7105. That precludes your hypothetical. By precluding the hypothetical, it requires the VA to address first whether that Q determination was correct. And if that Q determination is found on review by the board and by this court to have been correct, then the issue becomes whether or not the rating assigned was appropriate. But you cannot proceed to that decision until you get resolution of one review of the Secretary's decision on its Q determination as a matter of law. And that's what controls the outcome of this appeal. And the Secretary's suggestion that there is no difference between these two decisions, it simply is inconsistent with both fact and law. One appeal deals with a Q determination. The other appeal deals with something that happened based upon the revision. So the issue before the court would be before the board would be twofold on the completed appeal. One, was there or wasn't there Q? And if there wasn't Q, was the board's decision to do what it did in merging the two correct? But the threshold question has to be whether or not the Q determination was or wasn't correct. And there is no authority under 3.2600 for a DRO to review a non-final decision. That conflicts with the VA's own statute, regulation.
Mr. Carpenter, we have case law that says that's not the case. I mean, and honestly, I don't know how that would be favorable to veterans where, you know, instead of the DRO addressing it in a forum where the person can challenge it de novo, they would have to like write a post-it note to themselves, wait till the decision goes final, and then sua sponte initiate the and then have the, you know, initiate a basic clawback to get the money back. I don't see how that would even be fine, even be favorable to veterans. But also, I mean, we addressed this in Young.
Your Honor, with respect, that is simply incorrect under the facts of this case. The facts of this case are that there was a new decision made, and that new decision was a Q determination. And Mr. Westervelt has a due process right to challenge that decision. He has a statutory right to administrative appellate review, and he initiated that right under the legacy system by filing a timely notice of disagreement with the Q decision. With respect, Your Honor, your hypothetical merges two instances into separate instances. These are, in fact, separate instances. Once the Q determination was made by the DRO, then that determination is subject to review first for whether the Q was decided correctly. In your hypothetical, your assertion in the hypothetical is that that will be affirmed. But if it's not affirmed, either by the board or by this court, then the appeal must go back for a determination in a statement of the case for the resolution of whether or not the veteran was entitled to a rating more than 30% for his separate rating for PTSD. And that is the procedural due process right that is enshrined in the statutory provision under 7105, which is why the only available remedy to this court is to reverse the board's decision for lack of subject matter jurisdiction and order the secretary to issue a statement of case in response to the NOD with the Q determination.
Counsel, I just have one last question. The DRO decision that we have in the record of proceedings does not contain a cover letter. Maybe in the RVA you do have that. Do you know what the appellant was advised of what his rights or obligations were after DRO?
As far as I know, Your Honor, there was no notice of appellate rights following that decision. As I understand it from Mr. Frankel, he identified that on the VBMS that a decision had been made or came to have knowledge that that decision had been made and then filed the NOD without the benefit of 5104 notice from the DRO decision.
Anything else?
Unless there's further questions, I'd submit the matter to the panel. Thank you very much for your attention.
Thank you. I'd like to commend counsel for their argument and the written submissions, and the court will reserve its opinion after consideration of all the above. Thank you very much. The matter is adjourned.
The court is in recess.